have no idea what loss is. You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
It's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it? Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you. I'm just a girl. Not a threat. Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified of you.
Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO on Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host Matthew, and joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. So yes, this is for season two of The Last of Us, season two, episode four, day one, or as it's known in the game, simply Seattle, day one, which comes up in your bottom right corner when you start this chapter. It's a nice little touch there. I would say fully into the swing of things, and no, that's not a golf pun. I know we kind of kicked off the story there, but we're now in the next sort of part of it. Anyway, David, what did you think of this episode?
Another good solid episode, I thought, for this. You got Jeffrey Wright turning up at the start of this, which is always good to see Jeffrey Wright in something. It's nice to see the relationship evolve between our two sort of lead characters as well. You've got who are now the lead characters, I guess, now that the old lead character isn't really around anymore. So you're getting more with sort of Ellie and Dina, that relationship coming. You got that the aha performance in there as well with the guitar, which was lovely. I really rather like this. This feels like it's sort of setting up a bit more of kind of where the rest of the season may go. At this point,
because the next phase, sort of thing.
The opening sort of couple of episodes is we're sort of setting them up onto this path, and this now looks like it's sort of, this is the meat of the story of kind of where we're going, I'm interested to see what happens at this point.
I'd say me too, in similar ways as well. I love this episode. I thought this episode was awesome. And, since there's a process I go through each week with the show and the three watches and the three podcasts and getting into the swing of that again. It's interesting coming away from, what I call my initial off-the-cuff spoiler-free review, where I am admittedly much more emotional because I don't have to be so focused on that one. I can just talk about kind of... that's more of a kind of emotional reaction review rather than an actual breakdown of certain bits. And I loved doing that this week yet again. So that was amazing. But this is, because what did I say on that podcast? I think I said, like, this, I think, is my favourite episode of the season so far. Whether it's the best one, I don't know. I remember when, I know this is an old thing to remember, but I remember when we finished season one and someone wrote in and said, okay, which episode do you think is worst and best? And we couldn't really sort of, apart from maybe episode three that stood out and things like that. I remember I at the time couldn't come up with like a worst episode because that was difficult to do. But I think this is my favorite episode so far. And admittedly, a lot of it is because apart from the Isaac stuff, which, yes, Isaac is in the game, those scenes are not in the game. And it's great to get that new original stuff. I say original stuff, it's new scenes that build onto something that's already there, which is his character. So that was great. But this is probably, because again, I can't remember all of season one off the, off the back of my hand sort of thing. But this is the most like video game episode so far of season two, and the most accurate video game episode so far as well. There's still a few things that are, let's call them trimmed rather than cut. Trimmed in terms of things that would have taken a long time, or things you didn't quite need, or things that we could still see later. But like seeing the TV station, seeing the subway scene, seeing the theater be brought to life again, both from the outside, like that fantastic rain shot, and both from like the brief part we saw of it inside as well. I thought that was fantastic. They've done a few little remixes of scenes, which I thought worked pretty well. In fact, there was an element I was looking for in the subway scene that they did it so well without it that I didn't notice that it wasn't there on my first watch, and I think that's a very successful way to do that. But I loved this episode. And as I tried to, because again, I understand not everybody might listen to all the things I have said on different podcasts. It's a case for me of, okay, if you present me with a scene that is out of the video game, I'm going to be more emotionally attached to that and more excited for that than I am for the new stuff. Because even though the new stuff is going to tie into the things I know, I do not know what those scenes are going to be. Therefore, I can't specifically be excited for them because I don't know what they are going to be in the same way. So even though I'm sitting here saying, okay, I love this episode and it had the most video game parts in it, that still doesn't mean that I like, okay, I don't need the new stuff, I only need the video game stuff, because there's still Isaac in this episode, which works fantastic. But I don't completely know what's going to happen in the new stuff, and I don't have an emotional attachment to a scene that I haven't seen yet. So as opposed to like, oh, here's the TV station, I remember this bit, and I've got more of an emotional attachment to it because I've seen it before. And I'm enjoying both parts of it anyway, and of course it combines into these great episodes. So but it was funny again, kind of. I really loved the episode, and then after I'd finished editing the actual podcast, my podcast, I went and put the official one on. So again, Neil, Troy, and Craig, and I listened to that while I'm putting the rest of the posts together. I don't listen to all of it in one go, just the first kind of bit of it. And even Troy was like, "I love this episode," and he was saying the same things kind of as I was, and I was just really, really happy with that. And it was just, not that I want to let other people's opinions kind of bring down my excitement, but I remember even when the episode finished, and I was like, right, I've got basically no complaints with this episode. And then somehow, even from the video game audience, people were like picking at parts of it, and I was like, why are you unhappy with this episode, like particularly this episode, especially for us gamers who we've been looking forward to some of those scenes. But anyway, I still love the episode, and unless I pick up on problems that when we go through this recap, I didn't really have any problems with this episode. So,
No.
thought it was fantastic. All right, let's take a break there, do some housekeeping, and then we'll get into the recap. But let's do some housekeeping first. I actually remembered earlier this week, so as opposed to what were we like an hour and 10 in, and I was like, oh yeah, we haven't done that yet. So yeah. Anyway, let's cut over to that, and we'll be back in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there. If you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcast that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, there's another Last of Us podcast for this week. I decided to change the title up a little bit because I realised I was maybe making a mistake. So rather than calling this week's episode, because of course I do a bonus spoiler predictions episode, which is taking the bits that we have had, haven't had yet, and the bits that are still to come. So the 3 different categories of sort of scenes, and use that for predictions. And instead of writing this week The Last of Us 204 spoiler predictions, because that might look like I'm trying to predict episode 4, which I'm not. What I'm trying to predict is episodes 2 through 5, so I called it 205 through 207, just in case there was any, because even I looked at it and I was like, okay, that doesn't actually read correctly, so I'll be doing that for the rest of the season. It's a very, very big episode this week. One of the reasons the episode is so big, and no, I didn't do a full, because the episode is 2 hours 20 minutes, it is part of last week's podcast and this week's podcast combined, because I talked so much about predictions for episodes 6 and 7, which were still ones that I still have predictions laid out for, because again, I think I labelled the old episodes incorrectly. I put that in there to not, you know, repeat everything I said before, which still hasn't come up yet in the show. So I explained it on the podcast anyway, but you can check that one out. Again, that is, we do have an interesting email later on, but that is supposed to only be for video game people. There's that as well. We're back with this week with Gaming Talk. We talked about Grand Theft Auto 6, which that was before the new trailer came out. That was after the delay news came out, but before the trailer. So if you're wondering why we didn't talk about the trailer on it, it's because it didn't happen. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that next week. Talked about Ghosts of Yote and a bunch of release dates as well. And we said goodbye to Skype. I think that will be the last podcast we record on Skype. And in terms of at least Entertainment Talks podcast, we are in a new era, because currently we're using something called Teams, which basically works the same way as Skype. It's just called Teams instead of Skype because they moved things over. So we're out with the old, in with the new. So we said goodbye to Skype and we're saying hello to Teams with this one. And if you of course want to go back and listen to my fun emotion, because I had a lot of fun recording it as well, my spoiler free review for season 2 episode 4, you can check that out as well. Over on the TV side of things, but for Pixar, I reviewed the Dream Productions season 1. I don't know why it took me so long to watch that, but the 4 episodes of that, and I thought it was very curiously interesting. I liked it, but it's a limited series, but I enjoyed talking about that. That's from the world of Inside Out. Over on the United Cast, we beat Athletic Bilbao by 3-0, which nobody, including maybe the players, expected to happen. I know we lost 4-3 on Sunday as well. I'm not doing the Premier League games right now because of reasons I've already explained. We got, of course, a big game tomorrow, which is the second leg of the Athletic Bilbao game. And unless we really screw things up, because we will have to lose by 4 goals, we should be seeing ourselves through to the Europa League final. But you never know what can happen in football. You just never know. Got some more Last of Us ones. Over on the United Cast, also talked about Liverpool winning their 20th league title or Premier League title, which equals our record. So I talked about that and what that means for the future and all that kind of stuff. So that was interesting to do. And that's pretty much what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into the recap. So, 204, day one, but not starting in day one, back in 2018. So I believe 10 years before the current day events, because I think in the show we're in 2028, aren't we? So, Fedra, Sergeant Isaac Dixon, chastises his team for mocking civilians that they have harassed. They encounter a Washington Liberation Front, WLF, or Wolves, group led by Hanrahan, I saw a lot of people struggling to pronounce that name, so I don't know if I've done that correctly.
Yes.
Isaac kills his squad, only sparing the idealistic Burton, and reveals his allegiance to the WLF. I was talking about this scene, obviously in certain more futury, spoilery context, and for some reason I wasn't completely sure at first what group this actually was, because when we first saw the promo last week for this episode, and when we first saw, because this is the play by the mother from Atypical as well, and people were joking about, like, oh, the mum from Atypical survived the apocalypse, whatever, right, all that kind of stuff. When people were talking about whether it was screenshots or trailers or bits from that scene, everybody thought these looked like Seraphites, which I still thought, because I think from... You look at the way the Seraphites kind of dress, and you look at the way these people, like, they're not in military uniform or anything, but these are actually WLF members. These are Washington Liberation Front members. So the production that I sort of did on that, you can change it around for whatever. So there's that scene. Yeah, great again to see, obviously, Jeffrey right back on the screen, which is cool. He's been in what, Westworld recently. He's been, of course, is it Jim Gordon he played in The Batman? We'll see if we ever see him again in The Batman 2, or we'll see that film ever. So he's done some big stuff in the last couple of years. He is the same thing as, I think, Mel Dandridge in season one and game one, who did not Maria, Marlena. Right, so yeah, just like with season one and with game one, the same woman who played Marlena did the, you know, capture performance, whatever the phrase is that we use these days,
yes.
Who also did her on the TV show, Jeffrey Wright did the same for the game, and I think he fits it perfectly again here. He's the same menacing soldier, sort of becoming a leader as well, which is very good. Yeah, cool to see. Is his name Josh Peck? He was from Josh and Drake, I think it was called.
Yes.
Seeing him be more adult, more sweary was kind of interesting. I kind of remember, like, Josh and Drake when I was younger. It's not something that's, like, stuck in my mind, but I do remember that when I was younger. So it's interesting to see these people kind of coming into these adult shows and sort of being like that. So that was cool to see. And then, yeah, they kind of make this woman and Isaac kind of shake hands and make a deal with each other. Then this guy Burton makes a good choice, I think we could say. Because he pretty much, even though we see later on, he very much becomes like a hardened soldier, doesn't he? Which I thought was a interesting thing to see. Him being told there, like, okay, you've got a choice, and doesn't have to say what that choice is, but it's basically, okay, I have to either kill you or you join us, which I think we know what most of us would do in that situation. A few people were mentioning that this looks like an area called Hillcrest, which is one of my favorite sections in the game. It's a very interesting kind of, well, if you can keep it stealth, action kind of area. I don't know if this is like the exact same bit that you're in as Ellie, but it looks very, very similar with all the street stuff and everything. And there's a few letters, there's a lot of letters scattered around the game that kind of do environmental storytelling. And I can't remember, because there's literally kind of like these mini side stories that you can kind of follow, where you start picking up on names and who's aligned with who, and, you know, groups being taken out and all that sort of stuff. It's a nice little kind of side thing. And kind of scattered throughout those bits of information is the bits of, like, these groups that aligned or didn't align, and you can kind of see how that's fed into this storyline. So I think that was a good way of feeding that into that. Like, I don't think they'll bring sort of, what was the guy's name? There's this one guy's name who is included in these side stories, and people wondered if they were going to, like, bring that guy in and sort of expand, but I don't think we have the need or the really time for that to be brought to the forefront. So I thought that was a good way to kind of do that in this scene, and maybe we'll see these characters. Well, we'll see Isaac later on, of course. But yeah, very interesting kind of start to the episode. So what did you think?
I mean, I was a little confused when I first started about exactly what was going on, and then, you know, because, as we've established, I haven't played the games, and I didn't know whether this was a game scene and this was sort of the group that we saw last week or whether this is something else. And that's kind of, it was an interesting way to open the episode with that. Josh, seeing Josh Peck as well, it's like one of those things that pop up, like, I know that face from somewhere. He was in How I Met Your Father as well. That's if you've tried to place him slightly more recently. And he was Turner in the Turner and Hooch TV series. Those are the two of the sort of bigger roles he's had.
I never actually watched that, but I remember that.
Those are the two of the sort of bigger roles that he's had more recently since Drake and Josh. But interesting for him to just pop up on basically a little cameo in this because of sort of what happens to that group. But
I don't think it was going to be the other one out of the Drake and Josh's, because the other one's found himself in a little bit of a pickle, from what I understand.
I remember.
Yes. So, anyway.
So, yes. But I'm glad he's out there and getting that work and stuff. And it sounded like he'd sort of, you know, he didn't really know an awful lot about it and then sort of binged through the show in 2 days. You know, when he got when he got offered the part. So, you know, that's kind of cool. But great to see Jeffrey in the opening, and that just the sort of way that he casually throws those grenades in and kills all the
isn't it? I love that as well.
That was kind of quite shocking how they did that. So the way he just sort of murders the entire squad, and the Burton is sort of outside, thankfully. You know, I mean, it's a really interesting introduction to that character. Arguably at that point he's on the side of good, given the, you know, what the federal agents were talking about and how they've been treating the civilians, and then he joins this Washington Liberation Front, who are obviously fighting back against that. So it's sort of an interesting change to that. And then, you know, we get straight into the next scene and we see him doing some terrible, terrible stuff. So you're like, who is this guy? You know, he's really interesting, sort of morally ambiguous character at that point. You know, seems, is he out for himself? Is he out for, you know, what's changed in that period with that group? And yeah, so it's a sort of interesting introduction to him.
Yeah, very, very good stuff. Very good. And to follow on with a comment that Neil has made about the show is, like, okay, when you're not controlling, because in the video game you kind of have to stay with the controlled character, so it would be Ellie in this case, you don't have to do that in the TV show, so you can cut away and just do other new original stuff.
Yeah.
So this is a good way to do that. So, yeah. I was thinking the other day, actually, because they keep promoting, you know, the new return mode. Sorry, no return mode, which is like the, not a horde mode, but it's like a sort of survival mode. And they recently added Bill and Marlena. And some people wondered where, like, you know, where Tess is and that kind of stuff. I can't remember if Isaac's in the list of unlockable characters, but he could be one that you could play as well, I suppose, if they if they ever do that. Anyway, sticking to the Isaac stuff, we'll switch over to Ellie and Dina in a moment. 11 years later, Isaac, now the WLF's, or the Wolf's, leader, interrogates a Seraphite for his group's location to get that information out of him, torturing him with a heated pan. After realizing the Seraphite would rather be tortured than share the truth, he just shoots him. Burton, standing outside along another soldier who they both clearly have very different thoughts and ideas. Burton, standing outside with another WLF member, says, deserved it. Says that the animal got what he deserved. I have, as I've gotten a bit older, I've appreciated a good, you know, good villain dialogue, a good bit of villain monologuing. That's if you do indeed see Isaac as a villain, because some people might not. But because we're talking recently about, you know, Jeffrey Wright and people like Giancarlo Esposito and all these really great actors that can do this kind of thing. And of course, he does do his dirty work here, but that's not always kind of how things always play out with these types of characters. But yeah, dialogue delivery, acting, just everything's just really, really incredible and on point here. There's a lot of details I like in this scene. I love kind of as he's sitting there explaining, you know, to impress a girl and cooking and all this sort of thing. And the first bit I really like is he goes, oh, there was this hardware store down the road. You wouldn't know about it. I've thought that, okay, that's a great little way to kind of put a bit of background in there. And I like that, because you first can't see this, it's like who he's talking to or whatever, but you can just hear these chains, this like rattling in the background as he's giving this monologue. And I thought that was a nice little touch as well. Also, him just explaining, like, not that I care how this stuff sort of works, but him explaining that in regards to sort of, okay, which of these will, you know, gain its heat better and all this kind of thing, and trying to use that as a sort of intimidation tactic, I thought that was really, really good as well. Not surprised he killed him, because, I mean, at the end of the day, okay, if you can't get information out of them, and you keep torturing them, and it did get to a point where it's like, okay, they're just going to stick their hand out ready for you. You're either going to get the information out of them and probably kill them anyway, or just kill them, because you're not going to release this person and send them back to the Cerevites, are you, or something. So I thought that was pretty good. I also like the little exchanges between these two guys outside. One of them's like, oh my god, and he's proper sort of like, he can't see what's going on, but he can hear it, and he's just horrified by it. And then you see Burton come back up, and he's just stonewall. He's basically almost as stonewall as Isaac is in this situation. This Burton character, by the way, is original, because outside of Abby's group, who are also obviously part of the Wolves as well, and Isaac, there aren't really any other like named characters. So this is sort of another cool way for the show to kind of, he will talk to some red shirts, but it's interesting when you kind of get like a name to kind of rise one of them up. So you at least kind of, you know, have a bit more of a character there, I suppose. So I've no idea how long this guy's going to survive, or if we'll ever even see him again or whatever. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, just brilliant overall with this scene. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, great to have Jeffrey monologuing, and the sort of turn at the start where you don't know whether he's actually cooking, and then you suddenly realise, oh, it's a torture scene, and the camera spins around, and it's, yeah, and, you know, he's talking about how the pans hold the heat and all that sort of stuff, and just really good and menacing and a very interesting dynamic there. And we don't know anything really about the Seraphites at this point either, other mm-hmm. than they seem like a bit of a nutty religious group that follow somebody. And I mean, again, this comes back to an interesting sort of moral area of, we don't know anything about, as the, I mean, you know, game players will, but we as an audience of the TV show don't know anything about these characters. So maybe they do deserve it. I mean, you know, we don't know. I mean, there is clearly a war going on between the Wolves and the Seraphites. Nutty religious groups are never usually a good thing. You know, sort of that kind of fundamentalist sort of, we will follow this person regardless, is never usually a great sign. But equally, torturing people is not great either. So, you know, I mean, it's an interesting position that you're sort of in, of still not entirely sure who Isaac is at this point. You know, he's obviously somebody who has an interesting set of morals, but I whether he's completely out from himself or his group, or whether there is something else going on, or, you know, so I again, it's a really interesting thing with that. And I think Burton is, I mean, I didn't know his original character, but he sounds like he's an interesting addition. I think Neil had mentioned something about it's a useful way of having a character like that to bring the audience in because it allows Isaac somebody to explain things to, basically.
Right, yeah. That's a good idea.
You know, and get that information across to the audience. So, yeah, I mean, I can see why they've added that character in there. But yeah, that was a really good scene, that I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I loved, there's two other bits I kind of really liked as well. I don't usually describe characters like this, but you know when the Seraphites sort of pray into themselves and like, hey, she'll watch over us and all this kind of stuff, and how pathetic that came across and how useless also that came across as well. And me thinking that as well as Isaac saying like, oh, is she watching you from the sky? Like she's watching you get your ass kicked. Like that's useful, isn't
yeah.
it? Kind of thing. And then that then feeding into kind of, what was it? I think the Seraphite said something like when we've been cleansed or something like that. And then, he sort of just responds like, okay, well, when you shot that kid in the head with the bow and arrow, was that like, you know, was that good? Was that sort of cleansing instead? And then they just have the cycle of violence back and forth on kind of like, oh, but you shot first. Oh yeah, but you shot before that. And he's like, I'm not playing chicken and egg with you in today. I thought that was a really, really good, that those two bits combined, this kind of Isaac saying like, we're properly set up. We've got hospitals and stuff. You guys have got superstitions and bows and arrows. Like you come across as the more sort of delusional, loose one. Whereas I'm trying to get information out of you, and like, as far as he's concerned, like, okay, you killed a kid in the head with a bow and arrow, like that makes you wrong. Just very, very interesting kind of back and forth, and a great way to sort of, not necessarily subtly, because none of this is really subtle, but a gentler, I don't know what word I'm looking for, an interesting way to kind of first set up this, like, not just the fact that, oh, there's wolves and there's Seraphites, but like how they have conflict with each other and stuff, which I thought was very good. All right, let's move on from that, talk about, as you mentioned, our main two characters, which is now Ellie and Dina. Ellie and Dina begin their first day exploring Seattle. Beautiful stuff. In their search for Abby, with Dina covertly taking a pregnancy test in Capitol Hill, the two stumble upon the aftermath of conflicts between Fedra and the WLF. Deciding to advance by night, they decide to hide out in a music store where Ellie discovers a guitar and serenades Dina with A-ha's song, Take On Me. Take On Me. There's so many things to love about all of these bits. One of the things I noticed, for some reason I didn't notice it in my second watch, I noticed it in my third watch, when Dina comes out of the store, and she obviously knows by that point, but you don't know on the first watch because you don't know quite what she's exactly done, and sits behind Ellie on the horse, and because Ellie's not looking at her, she just gives this kind of revealing look. I thought that was a nice, like, little bit of information, a little touch. In the game, there is this quite big open area you go into, which is where Seattle Day One kicks off, and there's lots of, again, video gamey little bits where you can go. It is basically like a massive supply area with, again, lots of environmental storytelling and other things like that. Not going to explain what all of them are, because there's quite a few, but the music store's one, we'll get to that in a minute, that's its own kind of thing. A lot of buildings, and it's a massive area. And even though we saw it here on understandably a smaller scale, because I never, right, once we got to this area, I never expected sort of, okay, they need to find a set or make a set or a real location that looks like Seattle Day One in the game, because that would have been pretty impossible to do, because the scale of that is just, would have just been ginormous. So even though they did it in a more sort of intimate, confined, smaller scale, the bits that we did see from that still reminded me a lot of the sort of Seattle Day One areas, which I really, really enjoyed going through as well. So that was that was great to see. So what other bits do we have here? There was where they see the pride sign as well, and some people got confused of like, oh, they're both queer, why they're both confused. And it's simply the case that, okay, because of the time differences in between when Pride was more of a thing, when the apocalypse kicked off, bearing in mind these two were kind of born into the apocalypse as well, so because we forget that they're young people, the whole kind of LGBTQ Pride queer movement, it just wouldn't have been the same in Dina and Ellie's life. But it's interesting, she kind of, I think it's Ellie that says it. It's sort of like, oh, it's a happy, fun kind of town. And what's kind of sad about that is you look at the state of the world that they're in, and okay, Seth and people like that are still kind of hanging about, but and again, this is supposed to be more in the future than what we are, because we're in 2025, they're in 2038. It's not gotten, I mean, yes, it's things are maybe better than they used to be, but things still aren't great. So it is an interesting kind of interesting thing for these two characters to talk about again, considering they're both their queernesses as well. I thought that was an interesting way to do that. And yes, there is a bunch of in the Seattle area, there's like the road crossing signs. There's ones that are painted in the Pride flag, and then there's some flags and some paintings in and around the area, which is nice as well. So that was kind of a good way to put that in there. So before we do get to the music scene, because I want to have that as its own thing, what do you think of seeing Seattle day one, the open area bit?
Yeah, I love that little discussion. It did make me laugh, sort of, because I mean, I got why they wouldn't understand Pride flags because they wouldn't have been the thing. But it was the way Ellie, I think Ellie describes it as sort of, happy rainbow flag town or something. And I just really love that. I thought that was a really interesting, nice little touch for it. Yeah, so I rather enjoyed that. And I mean, I said last week that I thought she Dina was pregnant, and with her sort of throwing up and stuff. And when she said was in there going, "Oh, I just need to pee," and you could I said she sort of spotted the boxes, but you didn't actually see them. She spotted the pregnancy test. So yeah, I was like, yeah, she's taking a pregnancy test in there. So I kind of knew that's what it was going on. But yeah, I really love this scene, and just the two of
Me
them
too.
together are really funny. And yeah, them sort of messing around with the tanks, and she opens the hood of it, and like it clangs, and Dina freaks out, and it just all that interaction stuff is just so wonderfully done. They're really good together, those two. I mean, I much as I loved Ellie and Joel together, I think the dynamic between these two is really fun, and just you could tell they are kind of kick-ass as we see them later, but it's just really cute, this relationship between the pair of them and how they talk to each other and joke and mess around. And I just love that. I think it's wonderful. So yeah, I'm very much enjoying just seeing those two together.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, there's things like in the game, there's a group and there's a tank thing. So the scene from the start, like the sort of, hey, we got ambushed and whatever, there's bits that they're trying to, the ways they're trying to put that into the show here, and I thought that worked quite well as well, because you can come across this tank and it's a similar kind of thing that happens. So again, some very good environmental storytelling as well. Where do we go next? Oh yes, the Take On Me song. This scene is actually completely missable in the game. Because you go around scavenging and it's like, oh, I found this shop and I found this shop, and there's like a pet shop and there's like a coffee place where they both talk about Joel's obsession with coffee and things like that. Yeah, one of the most beautiful human moments in the entire series. And they did mention in a few of the different panels how a couple of them had learned how to play guitar and how that fits into the show. And the gamers kind of knew what they were referring to, that with that, with the kind of music stuff. And apparently, because Craig said on the official podcast as well, when not Isabella, what's her name? Dina, when she started crying, that was actually completely improvised. She was just so kind of moved by Bella's performance. I think Bella did a wonderful job here as well with the song. The music store itself, pretty much straight out of the game. They've got the little drum kit section, which Dina is an NPC. She kind of goes up to and she does that, and they joke about starting a band and all this kind of thing. So, again, straight out of the game, no complaints. Loved seeing it be brought to life. Beautiful moment. They've tucked Shimmer away in here as well, which I thought was an interesting kind of touch. So yeah, it's just the thing I kind of I remember when I first came across this moment in the game. And again, it's one that you can completely skip because the actual objective that you're doing in this area is you're looking for like fuel. You're looking for gas to open a certain gate for an area. It's a pretty video gamey sort of thing. And not only will you not find it in here, you don't need to come in this building anyway. I kind of imagined like not finding this in your first playthrough, and then you see it later on, like a video or someone talks to you about it, and like, oh, what do you think of the music scene? And you could have completely missed it. So, but that's why you got to explore the area as well, which is nice. But it's just, I think, yeah, the reason I kind of really like this, not only because it's beautiful and because the performances is really wonderful and all that, but in a world like this where you can go from smiling and these rare, admittedly rare, happy moments, and then you get like, people being killed in really brutal ways. After what they've both just gone through with Joel, obviously particularly Ellie, but obviously Dina loved him and cared about him as well. And with all the chaos and their whole dangerous mission and all that sort of thing, it's just a really nice, quiet human moment between the two of them. Because not only does it do like, lots of bits of development for both characters and their relationship, but it's just a temporary break from the chaos as well, which I really love. Which those moments are rare in The Last of Us, and you do need to make the most of them when they come along. So, just really, really beautifully done. So, yeah, what do you think of the music store scene?
I really love this scene. I mean, it is a lovely moment between the two characters, and just from the start when Ellie first finds the guitar and she opens the case and kisses there's like a little crystal pack in there, which is obviously which is for moisture, I think. And because a lot of the guitars are on the wall and they're all rotted and stuff, and then she finds the one in the case that has got the crystal pack in it that has obviously protected the guitar, and she sort of kisses it and then like gets the guitar out and starts playing, and then Dina comes upstairs. And it's quite interesting. I mean, Bella does a wonderful performance in that. Apparently, the director for this episode, which was Kate Herron, who did Loki and a whole bunch of other things, she was the director for this episode. Apparently, played through the games during lockdown and became such a huge fan that she basically begged them to to hire her to direct an episode. She's a very good director. I mean, she did Loki. Why wouldn't you sort of hire her anyway? So that, and they gave her this episode to do. But apparently there was some discussion with Bella to sort of tone down her guitar playing, because she's apparently an incredibly good guitar player and Ellie isn't supposed to be that good. I mean, she's supposed to be competent, but not like really, really good. And they apparently had to ask her to be slightly not quite as good and be a bit sort of just more normal with her guitar playing. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But I mean, just the way she performs that, I thought was absolutely lovely. And I'm not surprised that you've got the sort of scenes of Dina crying and that being sort of improvised, and I can sort of see why that had the effect on Isabella as well. I mean, it's a really interesting emotional kind of moment that in this, and like you say, when you're in the apocalypse, you sort of need to hang on to those kind of things, and it does have a purpose, because she's in that sort of headspace of sort of just found out she's pregnant and all
Right,
that sort of
yeah,
stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Just to add a little bit of gameplay knowledge in here. So because this game obviously came out on PlayStation 4 back in 2020, and it's got a thing on it because some of you might never have seen the controller before. I don't know. I don't know what range of audience we've got here. There's a thing in the middle of the controller called a touchpad, which looks kind of similar to like a trackpad on the laptop computer sort of thing. It's what I've got on this one, and you literally do. Because it's got like it had this idea of sort of swipe based gameplay stuff, and Sony kind of did a decent job with it, but it didn't really get pushed as much, and it ended up being like a big button in the end rather than kind of properly being used for what it was for. Because you can like swipe certain stuff in games, and you can kind of draw on different things, it's that kind of thing. But they used it in this for the actual guitar strumming. So, what you do, you walk over to the guitar as Ellie, press triangle to pick it up. She sits down, and you can use L1 and R1 to change the different tune things. And then, when it comes to like Ellie's actual finger positions, it has this like dial on it which aims towards different keys. You use the right stick and you point it at the you basically point it at the one it's telling you to, and then you strum the touchpad on that, and that makes the scene kind of happen. And in the remastered version of Part 2, they put a guitar free mode in where you can sit there and you can actually practice like making music and stuff. And because with the DualSense, that's the PlayStation 5's controller, because so many games they sort of have to have that on their controllers now. I don't know what they're going to do when they get to PlayStation 6, but because of backwards compatibility and things like that, they're going to have to always find a way to implement it. And you can have a big, there's a big trackpad. It's actually bigger than the one on the PS4 because it's a bigger controller. Works the same way again. You do the sort of strumming and stuff. So see, for that it works quite well, but for 90% of PlayStation's rest of library, they really don't need that. So yeah, they're sort of a little bit stuck with it now. But yeah, it's a cool way you can kind of do different peripheral bits and stuff. So what do you think of that?
I mean, so you can actually play other things on the, you can just play around with the guitar basically on
Yeah,
that.
when you go into the free play mode, yeah. Which is quite
That's
nice.
kind of fun. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
quite a nice little thing to do. Yeah, that's quite
So,
fun.
that's nice. I've scrolled down too far. We are at, Take On Me. While proceeding through a former television station that night, they encounter the bodies of several WLF soldiers brutally murdered by the Seraphites. Again, this is where kind of, when I talked about the PlayStation first party, kind of where you emerge into a room and you witness something. And I find it interesting the way they're implementing that this season with the way they're doing directing and camera work, because they're doing a very, very good job of it through all the episodes. I know this is a very dark thing to say, but it's a very dark story and it kind of needs to do what it needs to do. I realized where they were before, obviously, they got in there, and you get the classic TV reveal of, oh my God, two characters have seen something that they're shocked by. And I was like, do it. You've got to do it. You've got to have. I know it's weird and kind of dark to ask for, like, okay, you've got to have the bodies be gutted and hung. But I was like, okay, when you turn this camera around, I've got to see these strung up like this, because then it will be the same it is in the game. And I was in awe when I first saw this kind of being revealed, because I was like, that's like, as much as I'm here for, again, the new stuff and to see how that fits in and all the new kind of cool bits, I'm also here for the video game stuff. And when you do it like this, and when you recreate it as accurately as this, I mean, even the upstairs bits that they go to, the corridors and the sort of areas look pretty much exactly the same. Because it's not as if, like, they can kind of. Okay, you just take the scenes from the game and make them real, because you've either got to find shooting locations, or you've got to do CG stuff, or you've got to make sets. Like, it's not easy to do this stuff and have it look as similar as it is. So that was just, yeah, as dark and as violent as it is, which it needs to be, because it needs to push the idea of what these Seraphites are doing. Yeah, just really, really cool to see that. And again, I kind of, that's one that I look at and I go, I wonder what the TV only people will think of, like, because that's their first exposure to like Okay, you get that from the, what was it, episode 3, when they're walking through and that and the whole whistle stuff, and then you see the Seraphite in this episode talking more about what's going on, and then you see this, it's this kind of step-by-step thing of you're slowly realizing kind of what this group is. And yes, it's correct to call them like, okay, a religious sort of extreme cult group, because that's what they are, but what are the specifics to that? Like, what does this group do? And I love the way the show is kind of step by step revealing that. And yeah, this is some of the darker stuff. This is some of the darker stuff. So yeah, what did you first think when you saw this?
Well, yeah, I mean, it comes back again to this interesting sort of moral question of we know, we've opened on the Isaac and the wolf and him torturing people, and then you cut to this of like, this is what the Seraphites have done to, they've disemboweled and brutally murdered and hung up these people. You're like, okay, so I mean, maybe Isaac was quite justified in how he handled that, given this is what they're doing to them. I mean, there seems to be some argument about who shot first, from that conversation earlier, but you do sort of look at it of like, well, if this is what they're doing, it's one of the things that Last of Us is great at is these sort of interesting moral questions of like, is anybody actually right in any of this, or is it just people trying to survive in whatever way they can? And this group have formed around this whoever this person is, and I mean, it's not the way I go. It's a sort of religious nut jobby sort of thing, but I mean, yeah, it's a interesting question that is sort of popped up here, because the wolves obviously are kind of horrified by it, as are Ellie and Dina, and understandably, it's an awful thing to do to people. There's no need to do that to them, but then we haven't seen all the horrors of necessarily what the wolves have done either. We do know that they apparently murdered that Seraphite group that they stumbled across last week, which include children. So there's that. I mean, it seems that neither of these groups are particularly great, but I it's interesting, who's worse out of them.
I mean, I personally, I was going to say this earlier in the episode. When I look at what Fedra does, what the wolves do, and what the Seraphites do, none of them are. And again, it's just my take, my opinion. It doesn't mean I'm correct or wrong or right or whatever. They're all wrong in a way, but then they all have their own reasons for doing things. It's like the question I posed when we did episode 2, and I said, okay, to some people, they will look at what Abby has done. And they'll go, right, you killed somebody I care about, therefore you're a villain. But then Joel killed somebody that she cared about, cared about. So therefore, to her, he's the villain. But we don't see him that way because he's a hero to us. So same thing with like, and with this one, this is a bit more of a just almost senseless back and forth of you attacked us, we attacked you, you attacked us, we attacked you. And the ultimate solution is for you both to stop, because otherwise, then it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth forever. And what that results in is nobody getting what they really want. Just to kind of go back to it a little bit, I mean, we can explore this maybe later on in the season as well. This is obviously kind of where the like the Israel Hamas, not necessarily Palestine, the Israel Hamas thing of like, okay, you killed our people, then you killed our people, then you killed our people. That it's the back and forth. It's the because okay, you'd look at the Israel Hamas thing and be like, okay, didn't you guys agree a ceasefire? But then yeah, one of you broke it, then you made it again, and the other one broke it, and then blah, 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 back and forth. You can literally look at what Isaac and this guy are saying to each other of like, okay, we agreed to not do this, but then one of you did it, and then you agreed to not do it again, and the other one did it. So it's sort of. So, and again, I don't think that's a reason to look at this story and go, oh my God, it's Israel propaganda or something. It's the same theme which you can apply to a lot of different situations of one of you started this, the other one killed them back, then the other one killed them back, then they just carried on going back and forth for ages, and nobody ended up being right or wrong, really. So that's just to kind of go back to that and note that a little bit. That's kind of where this fits in.
As I said, neither side come across as being right in this either. I mean, it's not like, even if you did take this as a sort of, take on Israel and Palestine, neither side come across as being in the right. They're both perpetuating this ongoing, tit for tat sort of you kill one of ours, we kill one of yours sort of thing. And until they actually come to some sort of resolution and over that and actually sit down and talk to each other, this cycle of violence between the pair of them is gonna continue. I mean, neither the wolves or the Seraphites are coming across as doing the right thing. But it requires both sides to stop and sit down and talk. People that were hurling things at Druckmann over, oh, he's like got Israel and Palestine sort of he's used in as a sort of background for, there may be some influence from it there, but it's not like he's coming down
And we can't
particularly
forget
on
his
one
background as
side.
well, and
Well,
how,
no, but it's but even with his background, it doesn't look, from what we've seen so far, he's not coming down on one side or the other as being in the right. It is what it, they are where they are. Whoever started it, they are where they are. So, and just murdering each other backwards and forwards, which is what the Seraphites and the wolves seem to be doing, is not going to come to any resolution because neither side are going to stop. So,
Because you're then just
and
all
it's,
going to end up dead, all of you.
yeah, exactly.
So,
Yes, the whole an eye for an eye makes everyone blind kind of phrase comes to mind.
very
So.
good, very good. But yeah, all those political, moral, discussion aside, yeah, I just love seeing this being recreated here, and it gave me what I wanted from the scene, and I think that is what is most important. So yeah. Where are we next? Yes, evading an incoming WLF squad. Elliot and Dina escape through the subway where the WLF squad unintentionally attracts the infected and is they're getting killed. Ellie allows an infected to bite her arm and save Dina before they escape to an abandoned theater together. Same commentary from me. This is kind of again the sub because this is again pretty much ripped right out from the game. The only mechanical difference. Now you can climb on stuff as Ellie in the game. You cannot, however, climb on top of these two train cars. But that was fine for the show. I see what they were kind of doing. Don't get me wrong, in the game, if you could climb across these two train cars, it would be really helpful. But I'll go back to my recommended tactic that I said when they revealed a little bit of this in the second teaser. For anybody that wants to play the game, which I'd recommend you do that anyway, probably after this season or maybe after whenever. When you get to this bit, make sure you've got, well, you can't really make sure, try to have a brick or a bottle. The two train carts that they see are pretty much laid out exactly the same way as the show here, as they are in the game. Like the sort of, they almost make like a flat V shape, if you want to sort of call it that. I was quite impressed by how accurate that was as well. There's another train cart that's sort of a bit more broken up and it's sort of like half in the wall. You can go into that. If you lay down and go prone, you equip your brick or bottle, whatever you've got. It needs to really be one of the two things. Throw it forward just in front of the first train cart. That will attract all the infected to one spot, which will of course mess about with the human enemies, the wolves. Let them deal with each other. If you've got a Molotov with you, try and throw it obviously within the carnage because that will then cause them to get damaged more. And I don't think you get spotted when you do that either, because the multiple times I've done that, I've not been spotted. And then when there's just a few left, step out of there and then clean up and move on. There you go. I didn't do that in my first playthrough because I didn't know what was coming up in the first playthrough, but I sort of noticed that train cart in the second playthrough, and I was like, I'm going to lay in here for a minute and see if I can, you know, sneak around some stuff or whatever. So obviously they don't do that here, but them going through and shooting, and it was just, yeah, just really, really great to see that all come to life. There was a little, I felt like that this was Neil and Craig winking at the game audience, and I like when creators kind of do that. There's this little shot of when they get into, I think it's the second train cart they get into, they close the door behind them and a clicker comes up and bangs on the window. No matter what you've killed from the area, there is a little scripted bit where you, because you budge that door open, you close it behind you, and there will always be a clicker that comes up to that window and just pokes its, it can't get you, it just pokes its head at you. So the same like little, I just thought that was an interesting, I felt like I was being sort of winked at. I thought that was really nice. So, yeah, just, again, no complaints. This is what I wanted the show to do in this scene. Then they did it and they nailed it as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I liked this just as much as the TV station. Obviously, the TV station's got the additional thing of the hung bodies. But, again, just brilliant. Just brilliant. So, anyway, David, what do you think of the subway scene here?
Great action scene. And I kind of figured that this was probably taken straight out of the game, but you know, there were sort of gameplay elements to it. So I mean, it's always interesting for me watching through, like, you know, was this a sort of playable bit in the game? And I kind of figured this was, but yeah, I mean, the sequences going through the subway train, it's like, I wonder if you could look at it and going, oh, should have thrown a bottle over there, and you know, while she's sort of watching it. I really like the sort of whole sequence, and you know, we know they're gonna get out of it, but Ellie using her arm to stop Dina getting bitten, and I really love that. And you know, because she's just thinking of saving her friend without sort of remembering the fact that Dina doesn't know that Ellie's immune. And so that was like, oh crap, when we get to that, I kind of knew what was coming next after that. But I sort of thought that was a really nice little scene as well. That was a really nice little bit of sort of Ellie sticking her arm in the way.
That was very good as well. Just to go back to an opinion I gave earlier and explain a little something, because I mentioned that when they went through a particular section, there was something I wasn't even thinking of. So at the moment in season two, there's no spores in this scene. They don't really exist at the moment. In the game, obviously, they exist from the first one, and you have gas masks. I'm guessing it was a bit of a HBO thing of, like, we don't want to cover our actors', you know, faces with gas masks and stuff like that, maybe. So in this bit, this area is full of spores. Dina and Ellie both are wearing masks. Because Dina is getting, like, slightly weaker from, the pregnancy hasn't been like revealed in the same way, but she starts like stumbling and stuff because she's getting a bit ill. She cracks her gas mask. She has to take it off because it's broken anyway. Ellie gives hers to Dina, and Dina's like, no, what are you, you know, she freaks out. She goes, no, what are you doing? Because all that sort of thing. And she basically tries to hurry and be like, hey, it's okay. You got to go, sort of thing. And then they run out from there. So again, when you look at the TV version here, it's kind of, Dina still has the temporary freak out of, she freaks out much more later on, but I mean in the moment, you get the different bit where it's sort of, okay, because the spores aren't here, you can't do the immunity reveal in the same way. But I think the way that they've remixed it here is about as smart as you could do in terms of, okay, she, rather than Dina falling over, because this Dina looks a bit more, well at the moment, as opposed to how she is at this point in the game. But them being simply caught in this like door thing and Ellie's feeling she needs to do that, I think is a great way to remix it. But again, when I was watching this scene for the first time, I didn't even have spores on my mind of like, oh, there's no spores here. What are they going to do? I was just letting the scene just sort of play out. But yeah, the bite mark reveal thing, I think, is a pretty much perfect way to sort of remix it without spores at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing else he really could have done, but yeah, I think that was pretty much the perfect way to do it. So, what do you think of the change they made there?
Yeah, I mean, I not really thought about that. Because they made that change in season one, for I like I say, I think partly because they didn't want to use gas masks and they didn't want to use the spores. They wanted a slightly different delivery mechanism, so just to make it easier for the TV show to shoot, I guess. So yeah, I mean, obviously they can't do that reveal in the same way, but I think this works perfectly well. I mean, I've not played the game, I mean, it made perfect sense, and it's the type of thing that Ellie would do. So yeah, I mean, completely works.
Yeah, definitely. Following on from this, speaking of Dina, a heartbroken Dina prepares to shoot Ellie, but Ellie reveals her immunity and offers to sleep in isolation to prove that she will not turn. Excellent acting from both of them here. I would say a bit more from Isabella's part because she's got to deliver the kind of, oh my God, I'm building a relationship with this person and now I have to kill her. And that's just, why would she not think that? And it's this straight away. And I like with Dina, it wasn't a sort of she was waiting or she was hesitant or whatever. It's kind of because she does kind of say, okay, don't make this any harder than it needs to be. Yeah, good thing she didn't kind of just, turn around and shoot Ellie straight away because that would have changed the story a bit. Yeah, I like the way they did this bit. I thought that they executed this very, very well. They have a similar conversation in the theater as well about her immunity, and then the pregnancy reveal comes up. Again, pretty much the same thing happens. You just have a bit of a difference with, rather than the gas mask thing happening, it's, oh my God, I have to kill Ellie because the bite mark instead of the temporary, burning fungus thing that happens in the game. So, yeah, I thought the way they changed this up was pretty good. And I have some people talked about like the pacing issues here. I didn't really have a pacing issue with this. I thought that they evened it out pretty well. So, yeah, I was again very, very happy with this. So what do you think of this part here?
Yeah, I like Ellie's sort of immediate reaction when they get in, and she's just sort of, oh, well, that was crazy. And he's hyped, and he's the usual sort of Ellie kind of reaction to things. And then she realizes Dina's pointing the gun at her, and she's like, oh, crap. I need to explain this. And just that whole sequence and her sort of talking her way out of it, basically, and going, I'm gonna go to sleep in that chair. I'm gonna bandage my arm. You can keep the gun on me the entire time. That whole thing. I really love just how Bella played that, and it works so well, I think. And really sort of adds to that relationship, and Dina's sort of obviously heartbroken in it as well, and you can sort of see that, and it's just a great scene between the pair of them.
Definitely, yeah. I think as well, because Ellie is used to getting bitten, because she got bitten in like the store in episode one and probably other times as well. And be I think it was a case of as well, because everything was just so frantic and she's not thinking of, oh, I need to explain this when she gets bitten, it's just a heat of the moment kind of thing. Which it's good that she did do that, otherwise Dina probably would have gotten bitten in that part. And because it's the sort of slowly waking up from everything that's so frantic that's just happened. And yeah, Ellie taking a moment to wake up to the moment of, oh, right, yes, I'm gonna need to, now is the time when I'm gonna need to explain it. I thought was done pretty well as well. I liked how when, because we'll talk about the next bit in a minute, when she wakes up and there's the water dripping on her face, and she kind of looked, it was, you know, the signal thing of, oh, is she twitching? Has she kind of, you know, what's going on there? I thought that was a nice touch as well. Once it is clear that, clear to Dina that Ellie is immune, Dina confesses that she is pregnant. So yes, David, your prediction from, was it last episode?
Yeah, yes.
Episode 3 was correct. The two have sex for the first time. The next morning, Dina admits that Jesse fathered her baby, but shares that she wants a future and a family together with Ellie, who reciprocates the sentiment. The two overhear chatter on a walkie-talkie that the WLF are based at a Lake Hill hospital. Ellie suggests Dina stay behind and protect her pregnancy, but Dina insists on going forward with Ellie. Yeah, lots of this is, again, you kind of go from, if you want to kind of go over the episode a little bit, it's kind of, you have the guitar with the music, and it's the gentle, happy, quiet moments, and then it's the frantic, oh my god, TV station, then subway, and then, you know, it's back to the cruel world of The Last of Us, and then it's sort of, we've escaped all that, reveal immunity is done, that's all fine, now we can again, you know, at least for a little bit, until we then realize the explosions and stuff outside, we can be happy for a few moments again. And I've always loved the way that Last of Us has kind of ebbed and flowed between those things. It's just really brilliant at doing that. So, I just found the whole, if you want to call it, not specifically the love scene, but that and the bit afterwards of the two of them kind of cuddling together and actually talking about what was going on, I just found to be really, really lovely to watch. And from interviews, it's been very, very clear that Isabella and Bella, who I didn't realize until yesterday had very similar first names, Isabella and Bella, really, really just look like they get on a lot. I mean, this cast looks like they really, really, you know, love each other as a family and that sort of stuff. But, you know, very important that these two actors as well have really, really good chemistry. And even before this second season started, like even before we saw Dina on the screen for the first time, I thought that was just really nice and really kind of obvious and everything. And it just fits like a glove into this show and into these two characters. I think it fits pretty much perfectly. There's one bit that made me laugh is like, is when, what was it? Isabella's like, sorry, not Isabella, when Dina, sorry, says like, oh yeah, it was pretty obvious that you liked me. And then he's like, wait, where did you get those signs from? And all the, pretty much like everybody in all the audience is like, yeah, you made that pretty obvious. I just thought that was a really, really nice little bit. And again, you've got to make the most of these human moments when they come around, because they're short and sweet, and then you get back to people dying and getting gutted and other things. So I just loved all that. I thought that was really, really nice. It's a shame to hear about Dina and her mum, and they, you know, didn't agree, didn't get on with Dina's view of her sexuality. So that was just a nasty thing to kind of hear about on that. But just a really, really lovely scene until we get to this last one with the walkie-talkie stuff. So, yeah, what did you think of the two of them and their time together here?
It's a very cute scene. Really rather liked it. And, you know, the morning after when they wake up and they're like, ooh, morning breath, and they eat beef jerky. It's a way of trying to hide the morning breath.
They're like,
really? Really? That's, I can't imagine that's any better. But, yeah, I just love the whole sort of relationship between these two, and it's that they play off each other so well. And like I think, like you say, I mean, I've not seen really interviews with them, but it does look like
YouTube
Isabella
just keeps giving me them over and over again.
Well, I'm sure they do. Yes, I mean, given your background, but I mean, Bella and Isabella, I think pretty obvious from how they are in the show, it seems like they get on very, very well. So I just really like that relationship between the pair of them. I think they bounce off each other so well in the show. And I really like this scene. I thought it was just lovely. You know, and the ending of sort of, you know, Ellie trying to protect Dina, and Dina's like, hell no. You know, it makes perfect sense as well. You know, she's not going to let Ellie go off on her own and, like, deal with that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked as well, and it fed into how cute Bella can be as Ellie, the sort of I'm gonna be a dad line. I thought that was quite fun as well. So, yeah, the three of them will have to figure this out together. By the three of them, I mean Jesse, Dina, and Ellie. We'll have to all figure this out together. But they all like each other, which is important. And yeah, we should see this go nicely, hopefully. We shall see. So, very, very good. I've not got a ton to say about the last scene. It's just kind of, okay, this piece of the episode is concluded. Here's where they're going next. Here's the next kind of, Abby's still out there. Everything else is still going on, and the bomb kind of showing them, okay, here's the next sort of point of interest. So we'll see how that goes from next week. We've got three episodes left. Five, six, and seven.
Jeez.
Yeah, I just that's gone very, very quick. So yeah, there we go. Anyway, that's it for the episode. We do have some feedback, and if you wrote in last week, because we did go on longer than I thought we were going to go on last week, I've not cut anybody's questions. I've moved some of them to this week, so we'll see what we can get through in this amount of time. But if you'd like to write in, of course, for any of the spoiler predictions I've made, because there was a very, very big episode. If you're a video game player, definitely go and listen to that episode, because there's a just loads of stuff in there that I talked about. So go and check that one out. And anyway, any feedback for whether it's spoiler free, whatever, you can send it all my way. It doesn't particularly matter. You can send that to matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, social media eTalkyCare, Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. And you can write in, let us know, are you enjoying the show? Are you enjoying the game parts of the show? All that kind of stuff. Warren writes back in and says, I'm the one who wrote in about Geek Town last week. So that was the week before last, when he said about, all the AI conversations and clickbait and hate bait, and if you remember all of
Yes,
that.
yes.
So wrote
Yes,
in about
thank you.
Geek Town. Are there any other games worthy of this proper HBO treatment? I know you both play a good chunk of games and different games. Yeah, there's still a good few in terms of specific, because look, I would like a kind of fun Crash Bandicoot film in the same way of like a Sonic or a Mario. HBO doesn't need to do that. So when you're talking about specific HBO treatment, something that I think could fit in the same kind of, the moral ambiguity of all those sorts of things, I think Lies of P could fit that quite well. You've also got the sort of consciousness angle as well, with all the puppets in the world and things like that. So there's a lot of, let's call them human themes, for lack of a better word. There's a lot of human themes you could dive into there. So that's one that, and again, that would be another one of a game I've played, and to see that to be brought to life, I think that could be very, very good. Things like Red Dead Redemption. So if we're again sticking on the same kind of morality thing. Like something that's similar to Last of Us, that could be a good one. I know there's things like Horizon and God of War and things like that in development. Those are going to be thematically a bit different to something like Last of Us. Something else I was going to say about this as well, because I've been going through the Uncharted games for a particular podcast project. I'm on the, let's call it, newest one, which is Lost Legacy. And they did already try, obviously, the what's his name, Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg film, which was, it was just weirdly boring, which was the thing it shouldn't have been. But I'm not going to tread over that ground again. I was looking at that, and kind of there is some, not moral ambiguity stuff, but kind of characters that get Nathan to question whether if he's doing what he's doing is worth it because of how much danger he's putting himself in. That's kind of the more, the deeper thing that's going on there. Having gone back through recently for Uncharted 1 through 3 and then 4 and now Lost Legacy, particularly through 1 through 3, there's not as much there to grab onto for that kind of, unless you've got like a different writer in or something, or a writer who's going to take that story and dig more into it. But with 4 and with Lost Legacy, that comes up a lot more. But then I don't think that you can suddenly just start a new HBO Uncharted show and start from Uncharted 4. That wouldn't really quite make sense. But yeah, Lies of P is at the top of my list in regards to that kind of thing. So Yeah. Anyway, David, what do you think could fit the same sort of, you know, the deep prestige sort of HBO treatment?
It's really tricky because it's there aren't. I mean, there is a reason that Last of Us is sort of so unique in the spot that it holds for video gamers, because it's a very well-crafted, story-driven game, and direct things like that, it's very, very difficult. I mean, there are games that I think could make interesting TV shows, and we've had some of them, like Fallout, obviously, which I think did a really good job. I mean, I would love to see a, I'd love to see a Baldur's Gate TV show, because the storytelling in that game is brilliant. But at the end of the day, it's also based on D&D, and I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily directly need to follow Baldur's Gate. It's not its own original story. There is a whole world that you can play in, which is sort of what they ended up doing with Fallout. It's same sort of goes for Mass Effect, which they have been talking about doing a TV show for that. I'm not sure where the development stages are on that TV show, but Mass Effect is the other sort of high-end story-driven thing that needs a lot of money thrown at it. I think in terms of sort of big properties, that would be the other game. I mean, I know Starfield has got like a different sort of, you know, the game itself a little bit maligned, but I think the world that they created was quite interesting. I mean, that is a possible background. Again, the Elder Scrolls stuff, I think. You know, I mean, there's Skyrim, obviously, but I mean, there's a whole set of those games which I think work quite well. I think the thing that makes Last of Us so unique, though, is the fact that it is very carefully crafted, both on the TV show and on the video game side by the same people. So, you know, it's really difficult to think of another game which is so specific, and in that sort of format. You know, again, Witcher was interesting, but I mean, lost its way quite dramatically on the TV show side, and wasn't just a video game. It was based on a set of books. Cyberpunk is an interesting one, but you know, he's overall has a larger world to play in. So I don't know. I mean, there are some story-driven games that you could use, but yeah.
Do you know anything about Lies of P?
I know, yeah, I know some of stuff, Eliza B. I can see why you pick that as a possibility.
Because there's actually a mechanic in that game of like you go on a quest, you find out some information, and you go back to the person who's got you to get something, and they ask you a question, and an actual truth or lie mechanic comes up, and it ultimately results when you get to the end of the game, because you can get three different endings. One's like a outright bad one, one's a very good one, and one's a sort of okay, your morality wasn't quite what it needed to be sort of thing. So it sort of accumulates that over time, based on what you do. Because there's also it's not just like, oh, just completely click on truth every time and you'll get the best ending. It's also kind of poses, okay, if I lie to this person, it will be for a good reason. So it sort of does that kind of stuff. So I'd be interested in seeing that, maybe. That would be cool. Beth writes in and says, I know you love your scooter and I think David drives. How would both your vehicles do in the world of The Last of Us? My scooter would be pretty terrible for this because, I mean, I have enough trouble in the day and age that we live in with things like, you know, roads that aren't, I don't need roads to be completely flat, but some of them are very, very bumpy. And then obviously trying to avoid actual potholes and things like that. If you're looking at the streets in The Last of Us, it's like they're all overgrown with shrubbery and like cars are burnt out in the middle of the road. And, because I get the idea of kind of, okay, let's say some clickers or some runners were running after me. I get on that and I get away. I don't think I'd get very far. Now, cars, we've seen cars be used a little bit. Like we saw the when Joel takes Ellie away from the hospital. Joel's obviously driving in a car. Still bumpy and not, you know, smooth. But, yeah. I mean, unless I sort of went into survival stuff and sort of carved a path or something. Yeah, there might be genuine times I would just get into a complete dead end with the scooter. And I would just... I mean, if I got a horde coming after me and I trip and fall off that thing, I'm pretty much as good as dead. So it wouldn't be very useful. It's difficult enough to ride it around now with the conditions of the road, let alone, like, you know, whatever is in the middle of the road in The Last of Us. What about your car? How would your car get on in this world? I don't know what you've got, actually. So
I have a 1 litre Ford Fiesta. So, I mean, from a mileage point of view, I mean, it does a reasonable amount of miles to the gallon. The engine is pretty decent. I mean, it's quite old at this point because I work from home, so I don't really need a car that much. I do drive, but I mean, I've never bothered. You know, I'm not the type of person that goes out and buys a flashy new car because I literally just don't need to drive that much, so that it'd be a waste of money. So, I mean, I would say you can't get much more bog standard than a Ford Fiesta. So I guess I do as well as any other car would in the sort of apocalypse. I mean, you know, it's not as... it's not like it's an electric or anything like that. You know, that would be a real problem because charging that would be a problem in the post-apocalyptic world. I mean, you've still got to find fuel for it.
You could leave it to charge and then you come back and the power's been out for the 2 hours that you've been out
And you've got to sort of jury-rig something to actually charge it with as well because it needs, like, you know, a pretty substantial charging thing, and then you've got limited range in it. I mean, you know, so there's all that. You've been, but then you've got to find fuel with it. So, I mean, I would say a generic car that I have, I would probably do as well as any other car in the apocalypse. I mean, you know, apart from if I had something like, you know, a off-road thing, which might be slightly more useful, but I don't. So, you know, I mean, any standard suburban kind of normal car would about as well as that would do.
I'd also have the problem with, like, if I went to charge the scooter, and you've already got to be careful with it anyway, and, like, if it started sparking out or something, you get to a point where you may as well just throw it away. Because you could also be riding away from a horde, and then it, like, because you haven't charged it, you know, properly, because the electric that you've used has been, you know, bad because of the apocalypse, it might just, like, catch on fire in the middle of getting away from a horde anyway. So it'd be useful to a degree, but it wouldn't be a long-term kind of solution. So... let's get to... I'm going to switch these around a little bit. Josh writes in and says, I'll confess I followed you into the spoiler podcast. And, well, there's ... a lot in there. I don't know if you specifically mean because this week's podcast was so long, or because there's still obviously a lot to come in the story because we have the rest of the season, then possibly a season 3 and season 4. I mean, you could do what you'd like. I mean, you've spoiled the story for yourself, but if that's... Because some people do have the idea of they like knowing what happens in a story and then they go and see it or watch it, which is something I don't really get, but if that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. Because, one thing I said on this week's podcast is I noticed in the numbers... between the spoiler review, so these podcasts, and the spoiler predictions, I think I checked it only the day after or so we posted it, so I don't know what the ratio is of the difference now, but it was like 10 listeners apart, and I was like, that's very close considering the purpose of these two. And I kind of said, okay, that's either the case where people are following me into the spoiler section, or because I've covered this story for 5 years, it's maybe the audience that I've curated. But I sort of looked at that and I was like, those two numbers should be a bit further apart. But anyway, you can do whatever it is that you want to do. Any thoughts on that, David?
Not really. I mean, I'm obviously avoiding spoilers. I tend to try and avoid spoilers for things if I can. I'd rather not know where the story's going. I think that makes it more interesting, certainly for this show anyway. So.
All right, and then Abed has an interesting idea here. It says, I'd like Matt to do two truths and a lie for The Last of Us 2. So, I thought I'd ban myself from like mentioning names of characters that could or could not die, because that would just leave you constantly thinking about that character. So rather than me actually doing two truths and a lie, I'm gonna pick. I've written them down. I'm gonna read them out in a second. I've written three things, and I'll leave it up to all of you. So obviously, this applies more to TV only people. As to it could be three truths, three lies, or anywhere in between. Got that? So I wrote Ellie and Dina get married at some point. Someone is shot in the head. Number three is Dina loses the baby. So you can make that up for yourself. Maybe none of these things happen. Maybe all these things happen, or maybe two or one or whatever of them happen. So yeah, that's what I've chosen. What do you think of those three scenarios?
They're all pretty plausible. I mean, the them sort of getting married at some point. I mean that seems perfectly plausible that that might happen if they kind of stumble across, I don't know, or they're a priest, or they just sort of find themselves in a church and decide to sort of do a sort of marriage thing. That certainly seems possible. Losing the baby seems quite likely. So yeah, that's certainly possible. What was the third one?
Someone shot in the head.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that seems eminently likely at some point. I mean, because I'm sure there is somebody shot in the head at some point in this. I mean, we've already seen it, I think, already. But yeah, I mean, that seems highly likely as well. So I have no idea what's true and what isn't out of those. They all seem perfectly possible.
Nice. Which yeah, that's why I wrote those down, as sort of not something that's terribly obvious, but not something that's sort of, oh, those that will like something completely implausible. So we'll see which of those do or don't come up in the story. All right, and that's it for this week's episode. Thank you all very much for listening. Of course, we'll be back for episode 5 next week. Look out for my off the cuff, probably excited review on Sunday night. Look out for that. And then, of course, yeah, spoiler predictions, review for the episode, probably a gaming talk, and other stuff that we do. So, if you want to continue this journey with us here, of course, keep listening to the podcast, write in with your thoughts and feelings and questions and comments. And yeah, we'll see how the. Actually, I'll ask you as a bit of a fun thing. So, what do you have any? I know I've asked you about death predictions and things like that. Do you have any off, I guess, more off the cuff predictions about, okay, where could the next three episodes go? What are you thinking?
I have no idea. I mean, I really don't. I have no clue where I mean, I given how sort of slowly we're getting introduced to these people and we've only got a few episodes left, I do wonder whether we're gonna end this at a point where they catch up with the group that killed Joel. Is that where we're going to end up ending this season? And or maybe a showdown with them, and then it goes on from that. I don't know. I really can't tell where they're gonna end this because I don't know the game. So I have no clue. I really don't.
Do you like that you find it so sort of I guess unpredictable? Like you can't sort of it's predictable in like where it's going. And do you like how it's doing that?
Because clearly they are within, we know there is another season coming. And we know, and I know that that season is based on the second game as well. So there's got to be a break point at some point in this. So I, you know, I just, and presumably they are going to catch up with Abby and that group at some point, but I, as to where that happens, I have no clue. So, you know.
All right, well, we'll see where these next three episodes go. In the meantime, you can find all the other podcasts that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. That's for TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcast. Of course, a big game for us tomorrow. We should get through. We shouldn't bottle a 3-0 lead, but football's football, and we'll see what happens tomorrow for that. And then hopefully some other film reviews soon. I've still got Thunderbolts and Sinners to see as well, which are both still out in the theatres. So look out for those at some point as well. And then there'll be more content as more content comes out. But entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcast. You can support us by, of course, listening to more episodes, word of mouth, social media. And if someone mentions somewhere we podcast on, like The Last of Us, please mention said podcast. There's Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. David, that is yours. What is going on over there?
Well, Geek Town Radio this week, we had Domingos back on from Hollywood News Source, I think his website is, but that's who he writes for. But he was on, he did a review of Thunderbolts. So if you were, it's relatively spoiler free. There was a couple of little things that he gave away in there, but I don't think that hadn't already been hinted at in the trailers. So I think you're fine. So he did a review of that, talked a bit about Mobland, the Paramount Plus series, Another Simple Flavor, Havoc, which is another Tom Hardy thing, Ash, which is a sci-fi horror, which sounds really interesting. So he talked about that. Bit quieter news-wise, there was a bunch of Canadian shows renewed. We are in what we call pre-Bloodbath Week or Bloodbath Week. This is when all the shows get renewed and cancelled. We have started to have a couple of little things get renewed and cancelled this week, such as the Chicago's for NBC, and Fox have just cancelled one of their shows today as well. So we're going to get more and more of that over this week. So it's going to be quite busy. There has been quite a lot of news, having been relatively quiet for the last couple of weeks. But there's been a lot of news dropping today and yesterday, and we are probably going to have a lot more, particularly on the renewals and cancellations front, over the next week, because upfronts are next week when they reveal their new schedules. So it's going to be busy, I think. So keep an eye on geektown.co.uk over this week. There's lots and lots of stuff going up. And if you're a Buffy fan, keep an eye on the Geektown Radio podcast feed on Friday, because there is a big interview dropping on there for Buffy and Angel fans. Go and check that out over there.
Nice. Yeah, just waiting on Yellow Jackets. That's all I'm waiting on. So
yes,
yeah. Which I know isn't in like the networky TV stuff, but
no. And he's very, very likely to get renewed because it's absolutely smashing ratings for Paramount Plus. So I don't see them cancelling it, but we'll see.
We shall see. So just waiting for that. So yes, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. Go over there to get your TV and film news, and you can find us as well on YouTube for all the random fun video game bits and pieces and all that kind of stuff. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see what holds for episode 5. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.